Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It is 9:20 here on a Monday morning. JR Simmers back from holiday and Hammer with you. We're here until 11 o'clock this morning as we continue our coverage of the World Cup. And Korea has just scored two goals in the matter of about 3 minutes, and it's now 2-2 with Ghana. Man, the goals. We had a 3-3 game and now a 2-2 game in the second half already today. It's goals, goals, goals at the World Cup. Canada needed a few more of those yesterday. Anyway, we'll park that discussion for now because we got to talk some NFL as Week 12 will wrap up tonight with a not-so-sexy Pittsburgh-Indianapolis matchup. Might have looked sexy at the start of the year, not as the season has played itself out. But nevertheless, some good games yesterday, some games of note. So let's welcome into the discussion Duke Ellingson, our football analyst this morning. How you doing this morning, Duke?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Well, thanks. Are you a fan of the footy at all, or not really?
Not really, no.
No, no.
Kind of keep an eye on it.
Okay, all right, fair enough, fair enough. All right, let's start with, I'm not starting with the Eagles because they're my team, but that was the Sunday night game, and, you know, there were some interesting results yesterday, but I think that Eagles-Packers game last night was interesting. Have you ever been a part of a team back when you were playing where the other team decided they were going to run the ball? Either your team running it down the other team's throat, or you had it happen to your team and you were just kind of powerless to stop that. And how defeating, demoralizing that must be when that happens?
You know, it's tougher in the CFL, obviously, to do that. But I'll tell you, when if you guys remember back in the mid-90s when the CFL went with the American team experiment, and we played a couple of teams down there that were loaded with all-American offensive linemen and all-American running backs, and there was a couple games where it was like the proverbial hot knife through butter, watching them just run up and down the field. And I think one game we were down something like 28-0 at the end of the first quarter. So, yeah, been there, done that, and it is completely demoralizing. You realize that no matter what you do offensively over the course of a game, you're just not going to be able to stop the other team, and it's kind of game over.
And is that also really the way the NFL is built now? Basically take away the middle, Duke, that it is rare to be built by the running game right down your throat?
Well, it's so interesting to see how the NFL is so cyclical in its approach to how to defend offenses. And of course, with the advent of the passing game over the last 20 or 30 years, the rule changes, the incredible talents at both receiver and quarterback, teams have had to kind of get lighter to defend. And that's on the front. And, you know, you need to have your rush ends that can get pressure off the edge. But you really need to be light, a linebacker and multiple defensive backs to handle all of that, and now a lot of the teams are seeing that it makes it so much easier to run the ball because of that, and Philadelphia is a great example of that, and when you add in a quarterback, I know we weren't supposed to talk about the Eagles, JR, but what the heck, add in a quarterback like Jalen Hurts, and it almost becomes impossible with that great Philly offensive line. So I think what you're seeing is teams starting to realize that, you know what, if we can find a way to attack that lighter defense physically, it gives us a huge advantage.
Are you sold on Jalen Hurts as a quarterback that can win playoff games?
Well, until he gets in one and does that, I think it's hard to know. But, I mean, what amazes me, and it's not just him, it's so many of the young quarterbacks that have come out of college over the last 5 or 10 years. They're so much more pro-ready in their ability to understand the passing game. I know it's a much different approach in college, but just their skill sets and you watch him last night. I mean, very, very few mistakes. He seems to be so mature and understanding. Sometimes you do need to throw it away. Sometimes you do need to run and be safe that way, get out of bounds or slide or whatever. I think he's got all the hallmarks of a quarterback that can win in the playoffs because he just doesn't put his team in bad situations.
And to that, we saw Lamar Jackson. I think it was San Diego a few years ago, Duke. They basically built a defense to stop him and force him to pass. Are you confident in that when it comes to Hurts that, hey, the passing game has evolved enough?
Well, if you think about that, and that's a great example of how you could do that, and that was a very striking one in that, and I guess they were San Diego back then, weren't they? So I can call them that without a penalty, but what Lamar Jackson didn't have that Jalen Hurts does have is two tremendous wide receivers, and so when you add that to the mix, it certainly makes the quarterback's life easier.
There has been, and we're Duke Ellingson, our football analyst, in Green Bay since they drafted Jordan Love a couple of years ago, and it's kind of like, well, you got Aaron Rodgers still at that point at the top of his game, and it's kind of like, well, if you gave him a couple of weapons, Maybe that will be enough to get back to and potentially win a Super Bowl. I think that was the general thinking instead of having his successor 3 years down, drafting his successor 3 years down the road. And in the early days, whenever he got a chance to play, man, he didn't look like he was going to be the successor. He came in last night when Rodgers got hurt and looked good, albeit in a small sample size. But Green Bay is now 4-8, Duke. Rodgers says if he's healthy enough, he wants to play until they're mathematically eliminated. But is that the right decision for Green Bay at this point, do you think?
Well, it's probably not, but I'll tell you what, it's going to be very, very difficult for that organization given everything that Aaron Rodgers has done. And we all know the last couple of years have not been so smooth, but pretty hard when your Hall of Fame quarterback says he wants to play and is healthy enough to do so to tell him he's not going to. You're right, organizationally, they need to find out more about Jordan Love. And I think if the rib injury is as bad as maybe it looked last night, that's not an easy one to kind of bounce back from. And so perhaps next week there's just no way that Rodgers can play, in which case, you know, Love will get a chance to show his stuff for 60 minutes.
Do you feel like also just everything around it? I'm not a huge, but the vibe around Rodgers right now, does it just feel like this is a relationship that come to an end at the end of the season?
You can't see how it can continue. You know, Matt LaFleur had such a sterling record coming into Green Bay. I think his winning percentage over the first three seasons was the best in the history of the NFL. And you know, just things haven't gone. I think to me, it started with the playoff losses, the way they happened, both last year and the year before, probably especially the year before against Tampa Bay. And it doesn't seem like it's ever truly healed, and Rodgers hasn't done himself any favors. So, you know, if he still wants to play and obviously, you know, feels he can play at a high level, you know, I guess there'd be some part of me that would like to see him get that chance somewhere else.
How much credit do you give to Robert Saleh, the coach of the Jets, that was looking at his team that had, you know, record-wise, off to a 6-4 start, had a couple of good wins, but had a couple of losses where their quarterback, Zach Wilson, was terrible. And he's the number two pick in the draft only last year, for him to say, I got to park this guy and I got to bring in this case, Mike White off the bench and play. How much credit does the coach deserve for deciding that was the best thing for his team?
Well, he deserves a ton of credit. And to me, that's really, you know, when you have a head coach, when you hire a head coach, that's part of the deal. You have to make those decisions and those ones that are, you know, made through the prism of what's best for my football team right now. And we all would agree that benching your number two pick is not necessarily great for his progress and his career. But I think you combine the ineptitude that we saw last week against New England with his post-game comments, which I believe probably caused a whole bunch of problems in the locker room. And there's a lot of guys in there, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that would not have been real happy with that. So Saleh deserves a lot of credit for having the courage to make that call, and ultimately it has to land on his shoulders. And yesterday, it panned out. We'll have to see how it does going forward. But absolutely, he deserves a lot of credit for that's not an easy call to make, and I'm sure maybe there was a little bit of pushback above him. But you know, he's the coach, and he gets to make those calls of who plays on game day, and good for him for making it.
Does it also sound like this is a bit of discipline, not just based on the comments, but a lot of questions about the attitude and work ethic as well?
Oh, for sure, and I think that's why he didn't even dress. I mean, I think the statement, you know, if he would have dressed as the number two, which would have been probably the more logical approach, then, you know, Mike White could have gotten hurt in the middle of the first quarter, and in goes Wilson again. But obviously, Saleh didn't want that to happen. He wanted to send a bit of a message, and for him to not even dress yesterday, I think was, you know, exactly that—a strong message about, hey, kid, you got a lot to learn, both about your effort, your preparation, but also how you handle the media and how you interact with your teammates.
This may not be the end for Zach Wilson, but it's edging in that direction, Duke. Once we see things start to go this way, often that is the way that it's going to end as well. I mean, they swung and missed on Sam Darnold with the number three overall pick in 2018. Then they have the number two overall pick in 2021. They take a quarterback again, and if it doesn't work out, I mean, how much does either hitting in the case of the Bills with Josh Allen, or missing in the case of the Jets now twice, how much does that set back your franchise?
Oh, it really, really does. And it's not like Mike White is some sort of savior. We saw last year where he came in, I think, and he threw something like four touchdown passes in his first start. And then a couple of weeks later, I think he threw four interceptions. And so it's not like they have sort of the next guy in waiting. And so you're absolutely right. In this league, you need that you need that cornerstone franchise quarterback, and you've seen, you look at the numbers of what the Bills have looked like since Josh Allen got there, and other teams that have missed or are still struggling to find that guy, and it has set your franchise back multiple years, and you didn't even mention our good friend Mark Sanchez way back a few years before.
That's
that.
True. Well, you got them to a couple of AFC championship games, though, right?
I don't know if he did, but he was the quarterback.
Yes.
But also, and again, I find this so fascinating, guys, when it comes to the draft, it felt like from the day two he was drafted, he was no good. Was that just as simple that Flores didn't want him and wanted Deshaun Watson versus what the rest of the football? Because this guy has gone from kind of being, let's cut him, to maybe being the MVP of the league now.
Now you're talking about Tua.
Yeah.
You know what? It's often about the organization around that quarterback. And I think a really good example, and Tua's a fantastic one, because you're right, a lot of people were ready to give up on him. And now look what happens when you put some pieces around him. And I think we made the same mistake a little bit with Trevor Lawrence last year. Same stories, number one pick and going into that mess in Jacksonville with Urban Meyer and all the circus around that. And, you know, not that he's all of a sudden figured it all out, but man, you watch him yesterday, you give him some pieces on offense, you put Doug Peterson as his head coach and give him some stability, and you see the ability, the star quality that he has. Zach Wilson to me is a pretty distant second when you compare him to Trevor Lawrence, so that's going to be just interesting to see if the kid can figure it out.
With Duke Ellingson, our football analyst. So we had not one but two circumstances yesterday, Duke, where at the end of a game, a coach decided to go for 2 points and the win, as opposed to kicking the convert and, in all likelihood, overtime. It's an easy choice, easier choice, I think, for Jacksonville, because they won two games all year, to roll the dice on that, because if you lose, well, we just lost another game. But for the Chargers to do that in their game against Arizona, I mean, Brandon Staley, the coach there, loves to go for it and fourth down. What do you think of that? I mean, it's easy to say, obviously, great decision now. They made it. But what do you think about that? And will we see more teams do that?
Well, I was reading this morning some of the stats about how many teams in that situation between the year 2000 and 2015 went for it. And it was unbelievable. Only about, I think it was 6 out of 57 chose to go for 2 in that circumstance. And since then, it's almost 50-50. And you're right, it doesn't always work out. Baltimore is a good example of that last year. But I'm really all about the scenario, and you're right, with Jacksonville, you're playing a better team, you got a bit of momentum, you got the touchdown at the end, you know, you're not going anywhere this year, a tie certainly doesn't help you in the standings or anything like that, so you take your shot, it's a 2-yard play, and you got your full arsenal to run whatever play you like, so I love that. The LA one was a bit more complicated given the circumstances, but I think the fact that, you know, again, in the scenario, Arizona had moved the ball pretty easily yesterday, had put up some points in the game. And I think in that situation, maybe you're saying, I don't know if I trust my defense entirely, so let's roll the dice and go for it. So you're right, both of them worked out, but I think in both cases I would have agreed even if they didn't.
Do you think that, just to follow up on that, I mean, this is, again, regular season, do you think we'll ever see a team do that in the playoffs?
That's a great question. And you know, so some of the other variables, right, would be who's the other quarterback? How has the game gone? Do we have injuries? Do they have injuries? You know, is my defense gassed? Is the score 44-43? And, you know, those kinds of scenarios, if they all come up, I think a coach has to make that decision. And again, I know it's a 10-yard end zone, so it's not like you have literally every play in your playbook. But, you know, you think about it, 2 yards, an average NFL play probably averages about 3.5-4 yards. And so it would be very fun to see if a coach had that situation. Because don't forget now, in the playoffs this year, the overtime rule is
right,
that both teams will possess the ball regardless of what happens on that first possession. Right. So right, that'll right. be interesting, too.
Yep.
Thoughts on Baltimore? 7-4? Feels like they could be 11-0. They've had some disasters in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, you think about, I think this is the first time in forever that a team has lost multi-point leads in the fourth quarter. In one season. And, you know, this is a well-coached veteran team with a veteran quarterback. We know that they've had, you know, some struggles offensively to get consistency. And I think that's where yesterday came back to bite them. I think they were 4 times in the red zone and came away with 4 field goals. And eventually that came back to haunt them. But, yeah, they to me, they're a team that no matter how big a lead or no matter how far behind, they're kind of never out of it. But, boy, if you're a fan, you need to take some Valium when you watch that team.
Absolutely. All right. I wish we had a better Monday night game to tee up tonight, but the start of the year looked like it might be a good one. Not so much as it plays itself out. But next year we get flex scheduling on Monday nights as well. So Not so good if you hold tickets to the Monday night game and it gets changed to Sunday. But for television viewers, it's all good. Appreciate the time and the insight as always, Duke. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
Duke Ellingson joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators.
And the other big news over the weekend, Jer, I don't, doesn't get talked as much, but even down in old Dominican Republic was the massive win by Michigan over Ohio State.
Yes.
The way that's all setting up, right?
Yes.
That's really kind of cool to see a couple of the northern, I guess, schools and not, I guess, as dominant as the SEC. So that was huge for Michigan.
Well, although they beat another northern school in Ohio State.
No, that's what I mean. But to see them ranked 2 and 3, though, I can't remember. It always feels like there's kind of one team. And then when they ultimately get to the Final Four, they tend to get blown out. So maybe this is the year for one of the big schools to win.
All right, 9:36. Thoughts on anything that Duke chatted about there? By all means, let us know. You can text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll get to more of the Sens win last night. And Brady Tkachuk's season, I think, is worth a little bit further examination as well, because he is having a tremendous offensive season. So we'll get into that discussion coming up. Can quickly update you that after Ghana gave up the 2-0 lead to South Korea in a matter of about 3 minutes, and it was 2-2 when we started talking to Duke, now Ghana has bounced back with another goal. So it's 3-2 for Ghana playing in the 77th minute in their game with South Korea. We'll keep our eye on that for you as well as we head toward 11 o'clock in Brazil, Switzerland. You're listening to Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Welcome back, 9:46 on this Monday morning. It's JR Simmer and Hammer with you until 11 o'clock. And it's still 3-2, Ghana over Korea. They're playing in the 86th minute at the World Cup. Game two of the day, so 5 goals in this match, 6 in the game earlier this morning. We'll look forward to maybe more of that when we bring you the Brazil-Switzerland game coming up at 11.
Yeah, Hammer ended up looking it up. And just interesting tracking back to you, Aaron, kind of the swing or change of direction for our country. And we haven't had any Alphonso Davies in the past. What was the fellow from Calgary years ago? Not Hatfield or whatever that depict the British passport.
Owen Hargreaves.
Yeah, we haven't had many, but you think of and his ability or thought of possibly taken. I think he's from Ghana, right? Originally,
he's born in Liberia, but grew up in a refugee camp in Ghana.
Okay. So, but the choice of the passport, which is like a lot of countries, a big deal, and I'm sure there's no regrets, but just the pride that he brings, both he and his family, to Canada and to the whole program, pretty much. Program altering, we'll call it, when he chose that, and thankfully he did.
Yeah, our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. My honor is to bring everybody up to date on that. What's your current feeling about Canada at the World Cup? 4 options. Happy to be there. Happy we scored a goal. Need a result in the last game versus Morocco, or disappointed. And I know I like myself a good tight poll. That didn't come across the right
way. Excuse me?
And that's what we have right now.
Early wrench, ladies and gentlemen.
Need a result versus Morocco, 28%. Happy they scored a goal, 28%. Mm-hmm. Happy to be there, 26%. Disappointed, 18%. Let us know what you think, tsn1200.ca. But that's pretty good.
Yeah, both as a poll and probably an interview. And I know you had him on last week. We should have an opportunity to interview AJ this week. See where his energy level is at as he enters week 2 of the program.
He's not flying home today.
He's going to 3 games today. He tweeted out this morning he was going to 3 games. I did see that after the game, late last night early afternoon our time, was that he was already somewhere having pints.
Yeah.
So he got over it fairly quickly.
Oh, man. And just seeing the pictures there, and he and it's Ben McCoy that used to work on the station, right? But just absolutely awesome. And also, I'm just kind of not picking things apart, but I didn't really, there's a lot of Canadian fans of the game, JR, yesterday, and the control of the telecast just seemed a little different in that I know it's an international feed and then TSN has their crews there and stuff, but I was a little surprised there wasn't more of a wider shot. But any gauge from the first game or overall as to how many are at the games? Like, is it a couple thousand or?
Canada fans?
Yeah.
He said, I don't know if he gave, all he said was that there were way more Canadian fans than Belgian fans at the first game. So I don't know that he gave an exact number. Yeah. It's in the thousands for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And again, I just thought there were a lot of tight shots. wanted to see the wider part, but I know they're going to both. And I just felt like every time they showed the Belgian fans, like they wanted to fight us. Like if there's going to be any throwdown or Croatian fans.
Yeah.
Like they've made us a bit of an enemy now to Coach Herdman. So yeah. If AJ had to throw down against any good Croats, you know, that's because of Coach Herdman.
Can I also want to raise one other point? Bit of a thing.
Yeah.
Why have we played two games so far?
Yeah.
Why have we worn white jerseys or a white kit and a black kit and not a red kit? Mm. You're looking for a reason that Canada is 0-2. It's just as good a reason as any other. We're the country that's red and white. Mm. And it's not just soccer. Yeah. Somehow it's infiltrated our national hockey teams, too, in terms of at world championships and world juniors or whatever. Seem to love the black. We've moved away from the red, by and large. And I just...
Yeah.
My 11-year-old asked early on, oh, which team's Canada?
Yeah. No, we had the same thing
which
from
team,
home.
Canada, Croatia. Which team is Canada? Now, I understand. Now, I do understand. I don't know how the way it works. Yeah. If one country is designated as the home team, and therefore they get the choice of what they want to wear.
Well,
Croatia
was the home team yesterday, but they wore their whites, right?
Their jersey is always a little bit different because it's always the checkers, right?
Yeah.
So they,
yeah.
I mean, they have a unique look. There, it's not a sort of a you know, a bold pattern, as it were.
But it's our red, and again, I don't know, unfortunately, what Morocco's colors are. Are they green and red, Jer?
I know there's green is
okay,
a big
but,
part
but,
of it.
Okay, one of the reasons Sweden, you love their yellow jersey, which first of all is a classic, is they can wear it at almost any event. You can show up in your nice yellow suit there. You're absolutely good to go. I don't know, and I could be wrong if any of the listeners are out there. I can't recall ever being at another international sporting event where a team wears colors that are not in their flag. I can't for the life of me think, and this is my limited hockey part, I don't remember the Czech Republic showing up in black uniforms or Russia. Maybe Russia will now. But do you know what I mean, Jerry? I like the United States, hey, let's go to black uniforms. No, red, white, and blue. I can you recall any like the Dutchies? Imagine if you ever tried to pull that.
Well, the Dutchies traditionally wear orange. They're known for orange, but they have shown up in blue before as well.
Okay.
Occasionally.
Yeah. But I just, you know, like I said, I don't really understand it, and I do think the pride of, and this is even in the hockey, like, and we talk about the crowd. Every one of your supporters is wearing red uniforms. I will show up in a red uniform. I honestly I don't get it either. I don't, and it used to be in the 90s, everyone wanted a black uniform because it was supposed to be intimidating, and at least in hockey, you're supposed to look bigger. Man, that ship has sailed a long time ago. So I agree with you, and you got to bring those out for hopefully against Morocco, where
you'll
wear them.
And I am guessing that there are probably, and in fact, it may be for sale somewhere. I'm sure we have red kits as well, and I'm sure they'll wear them on Thursday. So everybody will have seen all three of the, not that black and white are colors, but all three of our different jerseys. So because it is about marketing and sales, I understand. And whenever you don't understand something, it always comes back to money. And so I get that. But I don't know. I would have liked to have seen us yesterday show up in the red. Mm-hmm, that's all. But anyway, that's beside the point.
Yeah, but old Coach Hurdy there, he was the love guy going in. Now tactically, all this other stuff, getting fired up. He's probably been drinking a bunch when he's over there and now choosing to wear black uniforms. I don't know. Maybe he gets sacked before he returns to Canada.
You know, I think.
And I'm jolly joking.
Old Hurdy also has to lose the blazer. He's looking a little restricted.
Oh, okay.
I think you got to toss the blazer, just go with the white button up, right? Yeah. Your wife.
My wife loves the white dress shirt
and
nothing else.
That's actually an excellent point.
Well, and a little bit looser.
No, I agree. Time to roll up the sleeves, Hammer. You got to work the sideline there. And I just felt also yesterday the Croatian coach was ready to throw down at any moment.
Don't cross that line, Hurdy.
And I know the Croatian coach deep down, though, when we scored that first goal, must have been like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. I do not need this to happen. I'm fired up about this match, and all of a sudden we're down.
Although my wife, in the middle of lobbing F-bombs as that game unfolded yesterday, also raised an interesting question, which probably will become a discussion point more so when Canada finishes and goes home after Thursday, is what is the future of John Herdman as the coach of the Canadian national team? Now, if they had more success and advanced out of the group stage, you know, and this may be the case anyway, are other football federations or club teams that have a lot of money to spend
They're always searching for the next big thing. I don't know whether Canada going 0-2 and not making out of the group stage lessens his appeal overall, but I think the breadth of his work, first with the women's team and now with the national men's team, I would think that John Herdman's reputation across the soccer world is as an up-and-coming coach. Yeah. And if it's not at a club team, is there another soccer federation that's got a lot of money to spend and has 4 years as a build-up to the next World Cup looking at a John Herdman and saying, what's it take, John? What's it going to take? Yeah. And I don't know what his contractual status is with Canada. I don't know if that's locked down already. Yeah. Could be speaking totally out of my backside. Yeah. But I wonder if that's an issue after this World Cup is over.
I thought when we had the gentleman that you're friends with, Jerry, I thought that he was locked up to 2026.
But that could be the case.
You know, you always have the outs on it, but I do not. And again, let's be realistic and also respectful that they won the Women's Championship. Canada's been on the rise. For a lot of people in the soccer world, they have no idea who this fella is and kind of the path. And I don't even know his path before he came to Canada. Oh, I don't think he's helped himself at all, JR. First of all, tactically, I don't think anyone's watched Canada and thought they got absolutely schooled yesterday. And when you also look at the small, those comments and the front page, I'll tell you this.
I'm not talking about Brazil.
No, I know. No, I meant as far as club teams. I know he won't be working in the Croatian league. those front page pictures. Did you see that picture they had of him?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, so
the cartoon, you
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah. So, no. The one of him naked in front of the news. Oh, is that a cartoon?
Well, they used another body.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Okay. Some Photoshop. Yeah, yeah. But I would say he has not helped himself any. I don't think his. And he hasn't. You know, he hasn't ruined his reputation.
Are you feeling any lesser about John Herdman? Either from a personal point of view or as a coach, based on how this World Cup.
Oh gosh, not at all, Jared. And I say that all the time. I've kind of lived it in working in management and coaching. Hey, this is a big deal, and I think you go into this and you've done. He's done an incredible job. I think this has been a great learning experience for him and for the players and for the whole thing. So, no, I don't. And I thought overall that he handled the post-FU comments quite well. I just think he could have sealed that off a little bit better after the loss yesterday. But beyond that, no, I think the players believe in him. I think the program believes in him. So, no, I just think he'll be a much better coach for this whole experience.
Right. All right.
Anyway. And I kind of look at this, and I know the blocks sound funny, but as you kind of point out and the things we have to improve on, I don't think based on, not that I have a depth chart of our system, but I almost look at this and say, you know what, is it more realistic that by 2030 we'll have our best team? You know what I mean? If you're being honest with, you know, what's going to happen in soccer in the next 4 years is an incredible amount of cash. Along with players, like how many people around the world that are looking to immigrate to Canada have now changed their thought of, boy, our children could actually play basketball or soccer. You know, I know that sounds strange to people, but you talk about trying to get accustomed to a new country. How welcoming is that, the fact that we have a good soccer program now?
Yep, absolutely. Anyway, we'll see how it all plays itself out. Mm-hmm. But one more match for Canada coming up on Thursday versus Morocco. All right, this Korea-Ghana match is down to the last 3 minutes of stoppage time.
We should live listen in.
All right, let's do it.
No?
Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of guys that are getting knocked down and laying on the turf.
Okay.
And I'm kind of like, you know, it's extra time here. Let's just.
Now see, the one another critique is I'm getting to know the players a little bit for Canada. What's up with this Buchanan guy? Is he the one that gets fairly emotional? I thought there was one of the games there where I know someone might have said something yesterday. But yesterday, I know in soccer when you get fouled, but when the guy goes to help you up, you're supposed to kind of pretend you're excited about it. And do you remember when the guy tried to help him up yesterday? It's like, get away from me. It's like you're playing with your brother. Mm. And then later, he was going to do the same thing to the Croatian guy. So is he a bit of a moody fella?
I don't know that I noticed what you're speaking about.
Oh, there was a point where he got fouled against Croatia.
I know
Croatia,
exactly. Yeah.
And the guy went to help him, and he gave him the slap that your big, you know, a little brother gives to his big brother.
Well, I think the Croatian player was like, all right, get up, you big faker. He's like, get the heck off.
Is that an actual quote? Get up, you big faker.
The mics weren't there, but that's how I interpreted it.
Okay.
But it was. I've not seen that, because it always, and especially for a country like Canada, like the falling down stuff becomes a major issue for people that don't like soccer, right?
Well, I mean, and the other thing that doesn't help is the 0-0 ties. And there's been more of those in this World Cup than there were in, there have been, I believe, 5 or 6, and there was only one in all of 2018. Now, that has not been the case today.
Oh.
It's been goals like crazy. So I tell you what, there's a minute left in stoppage time, so let's go to the end of this Korea-Ghana match. So again, Ghana's up 3-2. With about a minute to go in stoppage time.
Readjust his mask. It's Hwang In-boom in behind. Kim Moon-wan. corner.
Yeah, Jicky just panicking a little bit with that clearance there.
Last chance, possibly, for Korea Republic. And Ghana defend it resolutely again. It's Kim Moon-hwan, and now Hwang In-boom. Oh, it's agony. Sting taken out of it. Fired in, and that's a waste. And with it, with that ball, perhaps go Korea Republic's hopes. Lee's left foot not deployed to its best effect there. Referee suggesting there's still just a little more time. And Mohammed Kudus wondering if he is going to prove to be the match winner.
He looks that way. What a great game. Players out there have given absolutely everything. It's been a pleasure to be here and watch this. It really has. Everyone's loved it in the stadium.
Lee. Well, there's still time. Hwang In-boom. Kim Jung-kwon. Well, that's the height of optimism, but it's forced. A corner right at the end here. No, there's no time to take it.
It's all right. All over. Make the final. Ghana 3 and South Korea 2. They had 10 minutes of injury time in that. This has been one of the stories of the World Cup, is how long the injury time is. You know, typically, you know, with some of the fake injuries, it usually used to be like 3-4 minutes.
Yeah.
First half was always 1 minute. End of the game was like 4, 5, maybe 6 minutes. They've been 9, 10, 11 minutes. Been crazy.
Yeah. Also, a little critique yesterday on the coach chair or on the player. When Canada had the... foul. When the two guys lined up, a right and a lefty, were you surprised when Davies tried to go for the short side on that one? You remember that play off the right edge?
Yeah, for sure. Like, he kicked it right into the wall.
Did it not seem like a little bit of a low percentage play?
Yeah. Going for goal?
No, going for the short side. Like, it just seemed like, and again, they were lining up to try it, but I just watched that and thought, man, that seemed like a
There was a goal in the Belgium game that was from almost the corner flag.
Oh, okay.
Free kick from the corner flag where the guy beat the keeper short side. So,
that
Belgian keeper is like one of the best, if not the best in the world, and he got beat short side. So, it looks like the South Koreans were not very happy that the ref whistled it down as they had possession, because at least one of the players and the coach were both red carded at the end of the match for arguing with the referee, which means they're out of the next game. I think they're already eliminated with that loss anyway.
Coach will be sacked.
I think we're breaking down Ghana.
The coach will be sacked
anyway.
There now he just goes home early.
All right. We'll wrap up the Ghana-South Korea discussion there and take a break. When we come back, to the Sens. I'm talking about Brady Tkachuk's offensive season. I don't know if anybody saw the kind of numbers. Now, prorated, but over the first 21 games, that if he continues to put up numbers like this for the rest of the season, what that means. So we'll get into that discussion, talk more about the Sens' big win last night to wrap up the road trip. They defeated LA 3-2 in overtime to finish the road trip at 2-2. They're back home to face the Rangers on Wednesday. Some Sens discussion when we return. Right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. We're back. It's a bonus 50 minutes. We're going within the box. We're going with the morning show, or what are we doing right here? We don't have Lloydy this week because that was in the box is his show, so it sort of felt like it was okay.
Well, Hammer just played the in the box, so we got no choice.
No, that's true. Okay. It's a good point by you.
First of all, this hour will not be 50 minutes since we're so far back. We'll have some time. We'll have some good chit chat, but it won't be a total of 50 minutes of you and Simmer.
I mean, until we're done with the show, wrapping up the show there.
I say we should power through and just play all the ads at the end.
You don't want to do that.
No.
All right, 10-11. Let's get back to the Sens. In L.A. last night to take on the Kings. I think anybody that stayed up and watched the entire game that had nothing to wake up for today, like work or whatever, school, maybe right about now would be the time that you'd be getting up, right? Because the game ended at, just past 1:15-ish, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Good, solid. You got a wind down of 45 minutes because it went to overtime, and then a wind down, and then to bed, and, you know, good, solid 8 hours right there. Sens win 3-2 in overtime. Beauty goal by Claude Giroux, set up by a beauty. About 100-foot pass from Tim Stützle on the backhand from behind his own net all the way down to a streaking Claude Giroux.
Not quite Carlson to Hoffman, but pretty darn good.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. It was good to score the game-winning goal. But that was the way it ended. Here's the way it started for Ottawa.
Shabbat fires one through. Whoa, that deflects just right. Scores! Off the backboard and in. Brady Tkachuk, 1-0 Ottawa.
There's a play that began with Brady Tkachuk winning an offensive zone faceoff. And then he corrals the puck off the backboard after it took a bounce off a forward in front and scores the opening goal of the game, which, was, by the way, was his 99th career goal for Brady Tkachuk. So next one, he hits 100 and gives him so far this season 9 goals and 16 assists for 25 points. He's top 20 in the NHL in scoring. We're at the quarter pole, so this is not a... I mean, it's smallish sample size, but not super small. And on pace is Brady Tkachuk right now for 35 goals and 98 points if he keeps up this this pace for the entire season. And I don't know that anybody in their wildest dreams, whether you're a Sens fan or not, thought of Brady Tkachuk as a potential 100-point player.
No, and pretty impressive. And certainly the evolution of Stützle, you mix in Giroux. But I believe the last time we had two Tkachuks in the top 20 in scoring, JR, would have been Keith and Daniel. Or did Daniel ever hit that with your Flames?
Not quite.
Okay.
Not
but quite. but him and the brother chasing each other. I don't know if there's anything updated, but I thought Matthew's at 27. So they almost side by each right now, JR, or is he as
Matthew
Florida
is tied for 10th at 27 points, okay, and as I said, right now, Brady is tied for 16th at 25, two points less.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, fun kind of family thing. What's going on with them? And it has been very impressive. And you try to, at the quarter point, you kind of go through on, and I know every organization will do this, JR. You would go through right now at the quarter point and say, hey, who has performed above expectation? And a lot of that with the modern athlete, or any athlete for that matter, is certainly salary allocation of who's performing above expectation, who's kind of right where you expected, and who's performing below. And without a doubt, Brady Tkachuk, I'll put Stützle in there. I think Giroux. Sanderson, those guys have really, you know, they've been very good for what has not been a great start.
Yeah, it's a relatively short list of players on the Sens who have exceeded expectations. And listen, this is not Tkachuk defensively, and that line when Batherson was skating on that line still has a lot of work to do
for sure.
So you know, that's not to say it's been absolutely perfect, but from a sheer production point of view. Well, you know, when Brady Tkachuk was signed to his contract of 8 years and $8.25 million, I think there are a lot of other fan bases that kind of looked at the sheer numbers and thought that's a big overpay. It's like they know Brady Tkachuk as, okay, good leader, you know, good power forward. But what's he going to max out at? 25 goals and 50 points or something like that? We'll see if it carries on through the entire season. But at the quarter pole, on pace for 35 goals and 98 points. That's tremendous production.
Yeah, it really is. And so impressed last year when he missed entire training camp and had been the first Sens guy to reach 30 goals, or he along with Norris, in 10 years. I mean, think of all the good players over the years, JR, from the Stones and Hoffmans, and won't put a defenseman in there, but there's some real good players that had not reached that since Spezza and McCulloch. So, no, you look where it's trending to. His evolution of his skill, and certainly what has been nice is the opened up vision of Stützle and his ability to see the ice now and making plays was one of the things I kind of had on my checklist for the season as he evolves into a real good center. And We've seen a few situations with them working the give and go has been outstanding.
Tkachuk last year, as you said, hit 30 goals, 67 points last year, and played pretty much a missed three games. So pretty a full complement of games. And, you know, at if you went 30 goals and 70 points and everything else that Brady Tkachuk brings to the table, you would go, sign me up all day long.
Yeah.
You know, that. I mean, that's a big number. His contract is a big number. But Brady Tkachuk is, you know, he brings a unique skill set that there's maybe five players in the NHL bring every element that he does to a team. But these elevated numbers, again, he's going to score 35. If he scores 35 goals and 100 points or thereabouts, that's I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No, and as I've always said about ability, JR, the key to that is durability. Now I'm not going to put you on the spot, but I am going to put you on the spot. Can you name those other four players for me? And I mean that so sincerely. In that,
what other four
that actually have what Brady Tkachuk has?
Oh, I see. Yes,
because and this is where like Chris Kreider is considered to be the crease crasher, but he is really hard to find a lot of nights. In the essence of who has that power feel, and God,
say his brother
well,
is
that,
one.
That's what I was going to say. But it's funny because the brother, although as feisty as he's not nearly as big, but you're right. But it just is really neat, right? And a guy that brings it all the time, and nice part for him. And I kind of wonder about his brother long term, JR. But you just look at a guy like this, and it looks like he's going to kind of have his way in the National Hockey League of, you know, a knock on wood, staying healthy as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm going through all the top scorers in the NHL, and maybe five is too high.
I guess he could have. Ovi's kind of trending in a little different direction.
There was a time when, like, a guy like I would have considered Jamie Benn. Yeah. Now, actually, he's having a very good year, a good bounce back year this year.
No, he would have for sure. Yeah. And, you know, I'm trying to think of historically go through the teams that won the Stanley Cups. Dustin Brown, you would have had in that category at one point, right? You know, although he never put up the numbers that Brady puts up or can put up. So, yeah, just very few of those players that. You know, able to do all the things he do. And when you see the evolution of his skills, as you said, that's just a really nice part to kind of finish off the toolbox.
I threw that out on social media this morning that these are Tkachuk's numbers. Did anyone see it coming? To which Windsor Sens guy tweeted back at me and said, I did and had a heated exchange with a Leaf fan about how he thought Brady was the worst of the Tkachuks. I beg to differ and suggested Brady would be close to or exceed his brother's point total this year compared to his brother's equivalent NHL year. It looks like I was right. That's from Windsor Sens fan. I think that that Matthew hit 80 points in his third year. And Brady was still kind of – now, the third year for him was the pandemic-shortened year. You can prorate the numbers, but that was such a weird year. But last year, the production took a jump, and this year with Brady, and Matthew was 100 points last year or just above? I think that Matthew's played on a better team in Calgary and is playing on a better team.
Yeah.
So I think that does help elevate your point totals a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you could look at the flip side and say Brady's getting as much, he's getting as much opportunity as Matthew.
No, he is. But hey, you put, who wouldn't fear almost have the Legion of Doom if you had Brady with Barkov and mix in something else, JR. So, it's fun things to kind of track and figure out and see where it could end up going. But, he's really improved a lot.
Tom Wilson, somebody said?
Absolutely. Now, you know, and then as refined or necessarily, but, he even has another element where, you know, people are actually very fearful of him on the ice.
Somebody just texted in. I'm not sure if this is no, that's actually, I don't want to read that one. Never mind. The post-game show lasted until 2:49. That comes from Tango.
That's solid. Creech powering through and also had some pretty good company.
There were a lot of texts that came in.
Yeah.
Post. So, you know what? Credit to – that was a tough road trip for a fan.
Yeah.
Especially those that work either early or even just regular hours. Three late starts, all on school nights, as it were. Monday night, Wednesday night, and then Sunday night into Monday. Three late starts. So anybody that, to start off your work week on a Sunday night, 10:30, go until like 1:15 or whenever that game finally ended, like full good on you.
And if you're a good sports fan, you started your shift at 11 a.m.
Yes.
So you're doing that, and you're working into your NFL, and then you're going to that. Like you're talking a solid 14 hours of sports and pinting.
Pinting, yes, absolutely. All right, from the Sens' point of view, the two wins to wrap up the road trip improve their record to 8-12-1 so far through 21 games, so essentially the quarter pole of the season. To give you some perspective, from the last three seasons through 21 games last year, so 8-12-1 this year, 5-15-1 last year, so they're three wins better this season. In the pandemic crazy all-Canadian year, they were 6-14-1. So they're two games better than 2 years ago and 3 years ago, before we uttered the word pandemic. They were actually 9-11-1 through their first 21 games. So 3 years ago, 9-11-1. 2 years ago, 6-14-1. Last year, 5-15-1. This year, 8-12-1. The Sens record through the first 21 games of the season.
Yeah, and so, yeah, it's hard to kind of look at those numbers. And again, other years, Jared, and starts and big picture, you just look at this differently. And as I said, the parts of, and Pierre Dorion and all the tools he was given in the summertime to both send out players and bring in players, what makes this a little bit different are not only expectations, but the DeBrincat thing to me is just really kind of intriguing and very murky how this is going to play out. Is it a one and done? And to that point, and then I look at Zub on the back end, I kind of look at this and say, okay, this is kind of built to win, but I know they're not necessarily going to win. So to my point being, it's hard to imagine complete forward progress and that there are a lot of good pieces. But until I see how it plays out with Zub and DeBrincat, that to me, JR, is a bit puzzling in that, especially in having a down year where you're trying to get people excited and build the business, how good of a hockey team are you going to have if Zub walks out the door? And at the same time, and DeBrincat, there's a lot to, you know, he's obviously got value, but I think we'd all agree that his real value is if he wants to sign with another team like Matthew Tkachuk did, right? I mean, a one-year contract at $9 million with another club. So
there's still time for it, in my opinion, there's still time for the DeBrincat thing.
Oh, God, yeah.
To,
oh, absolutely.
You know, but you to figure out
based on
where you are as a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where he is, I mean, he scored his goal last night. He's got six now, which is, you know, below, I think, what people thought. But you look at it and go, the shooting percentage was more what it typically is for Alex DeBrincat. He'd be around 10 or 11 goals, and that's right around where he should be. So that number should pick up as the season goes on. So relative to expectation, is it short? Relative to actual performance and underlying numbers, he's probably right on about pace where he should be, and that should equal itself out through the rest of the year. So I don't feel as, if I'm a Senator fan, as anxious about DeBrincat because you still have his rights in the year beyond this one.
Oh, yeah.
But for Zub, it's getting there a little bit where I would have thought, and again, maybe I'm totally misreading the market or what his agent is looking for or everything else. I thought that and think that a contract for Zub should be relatively straightforward. There aren't overwhelming offensive numbers. Like he kind of fits in like a 4 and 5 year contract at between $4.5 and $5 million. Like it seems pretty straightforward to me. Yeah. And whether they parked it for now because they want to, I don't know. I'm surprised it's not done. Yeah. There's still a long time before July 1st, but surprised a little bit that it's not.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, to that, and again, in the money, as you've always said, not being crazy. But he's also a player because of the way he plays and the way he's built. I would not be worried on term. And I'm not talking about 8 years, but if he had to go 6 years on him, JR, for his age and for the way he plays, I would have no issue with that whatsoever. So, hey, we don't know the negotiations. But as I said, when I look at the back end that's already still a problem, and I look to next year and you have Brännström, you have Sanderson, you have obviously Shabbat, you have the evolution of Thompson and JBD that are still working on their skills. You know, you don't look at that and think to yourself, okay, oh, even if you go and make that mega trade for the right-hand shot defenseman, well, if that player comes in and Zub walks out, you're no further ahead.
Right.
So to me, that in trying to formulate kind of a vision for the back end, that really, to me, in having the rough start for the first quarter and looking at this and then just being realistic too, pretty quickly, not only in the fact, because you can't play the game with Zub. You could play the game a bit with him if he's not signed that, you know what, we're still having a pretty good year. We're going to figure this out. You can't play that game if you're a bottom third hockey team, right? Can't pretend, well, you know what, we're just going to keep him for the rest of the year. No, you have to trade him by the trade deadline.
You know his agent, Dan Milstein, who handles a lot of the Russian players?
I don't know him.
Well, I mean, okay, you don't... Would you have dealt with him, or did he come into the game after you left?
He came in after.
Okay, yeah. All right.
He took. I think he kind of got in there and took a lot of the
gambler.
You know, yeah, the gambler. Yeah,
gambler stuff. Okay, gambler. Yeah, I just wonder, and I'd have to look through it to see who some of his clients are. So, as I said, it's a lot of Russian players.
Well, he's got the big boys. You know,
know whether you know he is, because I don't want to say he's got Ottawa over a barrel, but if you look at the depth chart of Ottawa, to your point of. I mean, they're short on quality defensemen, NHL caliber defensemen for a team that wants to take a big leap forward in the next year or two. You could, you know, you could grind it if you really wanted to, yeah. I guess is my point.
Well,
to go for every last dollar and for as much term as you can. Yeah. Understandable if you did that.
Yeah, and what you've always said, though, I also agree. Like, I don't think anybody in free agency is going a ton north of $5 million. The only thing would be on the term of a contract. And as I said, I'd be very confident on the term on him. And at the same time, to give the athlete, based on the backstory, some security at this point, yeah, all things would kind of point to the fact that it would be in everyone's best interest to get a contract done.
All right. Well, something to keep our eye on. There's always stuff on the plate of the general manager. But at least for now, with a couple of wins, calming of the waters, maybe a slight bit. But the good play will have to continue, otherwise we're right back to where we were a week ago. Rangers in town for a face-off on Wednesday night. That's the next game. Sens flying home today. You're listening to Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Welcome back, 10:35. We mentioned that Wednesday the Sens are back home, which is the Wednesday, also the final day of November. And then they'll play their first back-to-back games of the season coming up Friday and Saturday versus the Rangers and San Jose, the New York game being on the road. And that will kick off the month of December in which Ottawa will play 15 games in 31 days. And there's a three-day Christmas break in there as well. In other words, the schedule becomes a lot more onerous than it was for the first month and a half of the season in which they had no back-to-backs. It was a and they played a lot of teams, at least based on last year's standings, a lot of teams that were on the outside looking in as far as the playoffs were concerned. It was primed for Ottawa to have a good start to the season. It has been well debated and has played out not that well, despite the fact with the last two wins that Ottawa moves to 8-12-1. We should get a little bit better indication as things get buffed up in December as far as the schedule is concerned. There are not one, not two, but three back-to-backs in the month of December. Seven of the 15 games are against teams that are currently in a playoff position. And that doesn't include the Rangers, who are right now 1 point out. So, yeah, I mean, you can make the argument that they're right there. So, the caliber of the competition is a little bit higher. And one of the interesting ones to note is that they're playing Detroit three times in December. And if you haven't looked at your standings, Detroit is 11-5-4 to begin their season, 26 points in their first 20 games. Ottawa's at 17 in their first 21. So Detroit is 9 points ahead. And I think to start the year, right, a lot of the debate, a lot of the talk, a lot of the interest in terms of the Atlantic Division is which of Ottawa, Buffalo, and Detroit, or all three, is going to take the step this year. And right now, it's pretty decisively in the favor of the Red Wings, and Ottawa is going to see Detroit three times coming up in the next month. So I guess the question is as Steve Yzerman turned things around more quickly in Detroit, faster than Ottawa? I'll say this, Detroit has missed the playoffs every year for the past 6 years. It's been 5 years for Ottawa, so they've actually been on the outside looking in for actually a year longer than Ottawa in terms of their rebuild. But if you look through Detroit, and I know I didn't tee up for this question, so maybe you don't know the roster that well.
Yeah.
But I mean, any concern that Detroit right now seems to have taken a major step, whereas Ottawa has not?
No, I'm not going to say a concern, JR. We'll have to draw a line, and you probably go back to the Tkachuk draft. You'd have to really look at when Steve Yzerman went in. What I can tell you, and this is really going to be an indication, because, again, I don't like in the summertime, you kind of try to project a little bit, but it doesn't work in sports. The one thing I will tell you is down the stretch last year, and I'd have to go back to the rosters, but Ottawa played, I thought, Detroit three times in the span of 3 days.
They did, yeah.
And it wasn't even close. Like Ottawa at that point, and then with what they added, I would have thought you'd be way ahead of them. So that does have me somewhat concerned. And then We also, I think, under the radar, Detroit made a lot of additions in the summertime, JR, right? And you know, we just wasn't talked about as much because it's Detroit and because of what was going on here in Ottawa.
They added three veteran forwards to supplement their younger players.
Change out the goaltending.
David Perron, Andrew Kopp, who we saw the Rangers pay a first-round pick to get him out of Winnipeg. Yeah. And Dominik Kubalík, who was good for Chicago a few years ago, completely fell off the radar screen. They signed him, and he's actually having a really good start to this year statistically. So three of those players are actually in their top six in scoring. So they appear to have added. They signed them all to significant contracts, but they added good veteran players to supplement their younger players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were also very bold on getting Ville Husso, and that right now is sitting at 9-2-3 at a .239 goals against and a .919 save percentage. Now, I did say the same thing about 15 games in last year about Nedeljkovic, and then the wheels came off, JR. But the goaltending, for sure, in trying to, and Ottawa's goaltending so far has not been their issue. But yeah, it's interesting, and this is also just when you do have a chance. They did make a coaching change as well. When you have a chance now to see them head to head, I find it real interesting to measure talent, and then just tactically, kind of where both programs are at.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, I mean, and Dave Poulin brought up. Lucas Raymond, right, as the fourth overall pick.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people at this stage, for just looking at the forwards from that 2020 draft, would say that Stützle and Raymond, like Dave did, maybe end up being of the guys at the top of that draft, may end up being the two best players ahead of Lafreniere and Byfield in particular.
Well, and you also want to go back to, New York Rangers last year getting to the semifinals, right? They lost to Tampa Bay.
Yep.
Pretty entertaining thing. Now they're 10-8-1. Is it a bad start, or is it the fact of this is a point where, first of all, you need more out of Lafreniere, but as far as Kaapo Kakko, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but when you're talking about the first and second picks overall, JR, and Kakko being a year older, or at least drafted a year earlier, the impact that they should be making right now, that's that next layer of the salary cap era that you will not advance as a program, no matter how good you are at the other pieces. That's a part of that may slow down some of their progression. And also, hey, I think we all said last year, there's still a lot of holes in that hockey club that Shesterkin was able to make up for.
Yeah, and he's not, Shesterkin so far this year has not had quite as good a year as he had last year. But, I mean, everybody looks at him and goes, that's still one of the top goalies in the NHL. Yeah. And the numbers should, rebound and maybe not be quite as good as they were last year. I mean, he was, what, .935 last year?
Oh, outstanding.
Save percentage. Yeah. Like, it was, I went to one of the Ranger games where he played. And certainly was aware at that point of, him a little bit, but just watching him play the position, it's like, I don't know, like you're the goalie guru on the show. I just go and watch, and it's kind of like you can just look at some guys and go, they have a presence.
Yeah.
He has a presence in net
that
a lot of guys don't have.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it had to be pushed, but the other goaltender I talked about for a long time and somebody should scoop out of New York is Georgiev. And whatever the rumors were last year, and people said he's getting in fights with teammates, which if you're going to fight D'Angelo, nobody has an issue with that, including the Swedish guy from the Islanders who pounded him the other day, Wallstrom. That guy has been gone to Colorado on a very good team, JR. He's 10-2-1. You talk about another scoop on getting rid of your goaltender that you just won the Stanley Cup with, which probably hasn't happened since Chicago did with Niemi. They've actually, as of right now, probably upgraded their goaltending, have the Colorado Avalanche, and Georgiev has looked great. And it's also this trend now, JR, of it feels like, and I'll have to go through the teams now, but how many Russian goaltenders are starters in the National Hockey League? Hmm. And maybe, what, five of the top 10 goalies in the league? Like, we all would say Vasilevsky's number one, certainly Shesterkin's top three. Start to go down the list there of young Russian goaltender Sorokin. Man.
There was a period where Finland was, where a lot of the good goalies came from.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, absolutely, it's Russia. Like, it's crazy how good they are.
Is the kid one of the goaltenders in New Jersey? Is he Russian as well?
Vanacek. No, I believe he's Czech.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. But there's another. Anyways, I'll go through the list. But that evolution of that position, as you said, it was Canada. And moved, and certainly the Swedes have had,
been Canada in a long time.
No, exactly. And then you move to Finland, but this Russian goalie factory is pretty impressive.
All right, a couple of quick texts that have come out throughout the morning at 12:1200. DJ Smith should be relieved of his duties today, regardless of winning the last two. That's from Dwight in Kanata. Tom in the Frew writes, Talbot seems to be really want the number one spot. I love Forsberg last year, but Talbot has won the spot so far this year, despite Forsberg's injury. That's from Tom. Good morning, guys. I understand media and people around the team have to keep people somewhat invested, but let's be honest, the season is lost. Ottawa has to win 42-43 of its next 60 to make the playoffs. Alex in the PN writes, don't overlook the importance of Zub and Shabbat being back in the lineup. And I think there is most certainly something that, in all the criticism of Thomas Shabbat through the early part of the year, that he wasn't playing up to, I think, a level. And I know the coach, when asked about it, bristled at it and said, you know, people, you know, essentially, you know, paraphrasing his words, but kind of watch the games. I don't think anybody said Thomas Shabbat isn't an integral part of the defense. First of all, that defense is very thin to begin with. No. He's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
I think the criticism, or at least from me, some of the criticism has been, I don't think he's playing as well as he has and should. That was the criticism. No, it wasn't like, get rid of the guy.
No, exactly. And, you know, again, we have our debates about Zaitsev. On Thomas Shabbat, this is higher, holding him to, first of all, and it doesn't even, it does have to do with the money to some extent, JR. Now, I know not in actual compensation this year, but he's an $8 million defenseman. So you have expectations, of course, on an eight-year deal. But I just know, starting last year, he and Zub, he was one of the best players on the planet. It's just a matter of meeting expectations. And as you go through a checklist of things you have to worry about as a hockey team, JR, and you try to get in slotting your defense, the last thing you should come into a season, and I say Brady Tkachuk in a positive way, I shouldn't be worrying about Thomas Shabbat. You know, now, this is also going to be very interesting. I saw where he played 28 minutes last night. Are you going to go back to that and do this in a grinding month of December with a defenseman? You're just asking for trouble. So, no, I don't think. And as I said, I would hope that everybody around Thomas Shabbat, including the club, would just say, hey, we hold you to a higher standard, including probably yourself.
Dave texts at 12-1200. Good morning, fellas. Great win by the Sens last night. It couldn't come at a better time, as today I'm working with a bozo who insisted Stützle wouldn't be half the player Byfield would be within 3 years. I can't wait to rub it in his face all day. That comes from Dave.
Yeah, and Dave, again, first of all, I thought Kenny Walls always had some great information and intel on Byfield. I felt for where this was trending, especially when people started the Logan Brown talk. I was like, please don't have Byfield come here. But I said, after watching that World Junior, if you're a scout, you're just being honest. And it's not always exact, but pretty darn close. By the time that first World Junior wrapped up, if you didn't think Stützle was a better talent than Byfield, and that doesn't always mean a player won't turn out. But on a pivotal pick like that, if you're the LA scouts and you're not questioning yourself, then you're not doing a very good job internally.
All right, 10:46, we'll take a break. Come back with a final segment. We'll take into 2:11, and that's when Brazil... they'll be dancing the salsa. Taking on Switzerland World Cup action coming up right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Brazil and Switzerland are taking to the pitch as we speak, ready for the anthems, and the game kicks off in about 10 minutes or so from now. We'll bring you that one coming up in just a second. A couple of things here on the soccer, a couple of texts. Yeah, we scored our first ever goal, but lost 4-1 and have been eliminated. So Canadian of us to celebrate trying hard. That's from DDT.
Yeah.
From Unsigned, from a world football point of view, it's been a welcome to the big boys from a World Cup tournament goes, and from certainly a coach's point of view. Not sure what that makes sense. A Zookeeper writes, I'm not a soccer guy. As an outside party, it was clear from the start that Canada is World Cup fodder. That's okay, though. You need a bunch of teams. Mm. We're like the Swiss in hockey. That's from the Zookeeper. Yeah. And when I thought about that, I thought, you know, every once in a while, the Swiss at a World Junior or even a World Championship there, or even an Olympics, right? They beat Canada in 2006. Martin Gerber, shout out Canada. They can surprise you. They punch above their weight every once in a while. But for the most part, they're kind of in that next layer, if not a layer below that next layer. So I thought that was actually not a bad text just in terms to give us some perspective.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say, and again, certainly basketball way higher, JR, but I kind of look at big picture. My expectations are that maybe not even in 2026, maybe 2030, I do feel like it's headed towards, and Switzerland's just happy to be there. If you coach the Swiss team, which I've had friends, including the real Sean Simpson and Glenn Hanlon, they're told make it to the quarterfinal, right? If you make it to the quarterfinal, you are good to go. I don't feel like that's where we're headed, to be honest with you. Now, I'm not saying we're going to win one right away, and God, England's never won one, but I do feel like the internal expectations, and I say that with basketball as well, for the caliber of athlete that we're adding on the soccer side, JR, I don't think it's a happy to be there. I just think in this one here, we now realize if there was a chance to scoop up some points, it was against Belgium, not against Croatia. Mm.
Sean texted in earlier this morning, is it too early for a sorry DJ chant on Wednesday? Because I believe when the Sens played their last home game, The coach and the players were serenaded by some. That wasn't loud, but you could hear some with a fire DJ chant.
Well, it took Lindy Ruff a 12-game winning streak to get the love of the newer people. Now, we're a softer group, so if we could get to a 4- or 5-gamer, okay, we'll get with that. But I think it's
just
two
at this stage.
Two-gamer and then overtime.
It's kept the Wolves at bay for now.
Exactly.
We'll put it that way. Rob writes, hey guys, is it November 30th at 11:59 to which Formanton needs to be signed? That comes from Rob. I thought I read, Rob, I believe, because it's December, for him to be eligible to play in the NHL this year, be it for Ottawa or another team, he has to be signed by December 1st. Yeah. I believe the deadline is actually 5 o'clock on Thursday, close of business on Thursday. Because if you remember, Nylander, back with his one with Toronto, that one went right to the final hour before he finally signed.
And there was even some issue whether or not they had filed it soon enough, which you know what the Leafs say on the office, and that was going to be fine. But
anyway, that will be a story this week.
Also, I was contacted over the weekend by a friend of the show, Todd Lushko, and he just asked me what's going on with Formanton, which we had a bit of a private conversation. But he just said his name is being circulated around Europe, JR.
Right.
But nobody's overly interested because we understand the circumstance. I'm going to guess, to be quite honest with you, it may even be a little on the late side, but if he's probably looking for employment opportunities, it may end up being in Russia, I'll be quite honest with you.
Right. All right, something to keep our eye on this week.